Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. More and more Americans are beginning to take notice of something fairly new in healthcare, that's telemedicine. It's a process whereby people with non-life-threatening illnesses can hook up and engage in a video or audio consultation. Doctors can diagnose and prescribe a course of treatment. The patient avoids delays in appointments, avoids the need to visit the doctor's office, and it is generally less costly than an office visit. Insurance companies are signing on. The number of online care providers is increasing. We'll look at telemedicine from several angles on today's program. We'll be talking with a representative of UnitedHealthcare in a few minutes, with a doctor who treats patients online, and with a patient who is very much satisfied with his experience. In studio with me is Dr. Tom Hale, the Executive Medical Director of Mercy Virtual here in St. Louis. Dr. Hale, thanks so much for being with us.
Don, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
You know, I alluded to this in the introduction because I've been thinking of telemedicine as something that is almost brand new, but you have a different story. You've been at it now for about 9 years.
We have, Don. We actually started with you had mentioned in the intro about non-life-threatening aspects. We actually started with the intensive care units, monitoring them remotely from St. Louis across four states, over 800 miles. And those are very critically ill patients.
Well, how is it working?
You know, it's really been remarkable how well it has worked. It one always has to remember this is not something to replace the doctors or nurses. This is something to augment their care, to give them extra eyes, extra virtual hands, and the ability to take all the data that's coming in off that very critically ill patient and help and have the computers use decision support to manage that patient even better.
You know, I mentioned the non-life-threatening aspect of it because what we've come to know most recently, a number of online healthcare companies have surfaced, and people who have relatively minor complaints are calling in and speaking through Skype or whatever with a physician and having their problems taken care of. That's where we are today.
Yeah, I agree. That is probably the largest commercial aspect broadly across the country. But I think one of the other life-threatening aspects that it's made a significant impact is in stroke. There aren't enough neurologists in the country, and there aren't enough neurologists certainly in the emergency room as they have to come in from home when an event occurs. And now with the new treatments of stroke, time is brain. If you treat early, you can save brain and many times reverse those events that the stroke is occurring.
How does that work with virtual doctoring?
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting to see when you're in the emergency room, there's a cart with a television or a monitor, and that cart can look in the patient's eyes and transmit all those images, including sounds from the stethoscope, transmits those images to the neurologist who maybe at 2 o'clock in the morning may be in their home and sees that patient upon entry into the emergency room almost as they wheel them into the room.
How do doctors like this?
You know, it patients love it. Patients see the advantages right away. Doctors are reticent to change. Back when the stethoscope was very first invented over a couple of centuries ago, most doctors thought it was just an idiotic tool that would never be necessary because you could always put your ear on the patient's chest. I think that doctors in general are slow to move on to the next change in medical care.
You mentioned before we went on the air, just as we were going on the air, that things are really going to change dramatically over the next couple of years.
Well, they have to, Don. If you think about it, there aren't enough doctors, and most doctors are not well distributed. They're around urban areas. Mercy, which actually is 33 hospitals across five states over 800 miles, has 60% of its patients in rural areas. All those areas don't have the specialists that they need, and many don't have primary care. Telemedicine is one of the ways that we can bring that care to the communities.
Are you set up in such a way at Mercy whereby people can call in from their homes and have a consultation with a doctor face-to-face, as it were, online and deal with it that way?
We have some specialties that are doing that now. You'll be talking to a gentleman in psychiatry. We have both child psychiatry and adult psychiatry that do consultations. Neurology does consultative medicine through telehealth. And it is growing rapidly as the uses are evident to see, which we'll get later on as we talk about the virtual care center is one of the reasons why we built the virtual care center.
That's coming online in just a couple of weeks, I guess.
That's right. We take the keys June 1st.
Right. And very briefly, we'll get into more detail later, very briefly, what is that going to involve?
So the Virtual Care Center will be the first of its kind in the world, actually, and that's where we will house and center our central monitoring aspects like the eICU or the virtual ICU, but also connect those patients and physicians for those consultative services.
And what about the insurance factor in all of this? Insurance companies going along quite nicely with all of this?
As always, no. However, there are progressive insurance companies who you'll be talking to today, United Healthcare, who see some of the power in telemedicine. But all in all, the only reason telemedicine has not moved as rapidly as it should have, because it is great clinical care and great access to care, is because of the payment methodology not changing from fee-for-service over to population health.
Well, that apparently is changing because, as I mentioned, United Healthcare, and as you just mentioned, United Healthcare is on board. I had a chance to speak a few days ago with Karen Scott, the Senior Director of Product and Innovation at United Healthcare. It's one of the nation's largest health insurance companies, of course. United just recently announced plans to offer coverage for virtual medical visits. I asked how and why United Healthcare decided to get more involved in telemedicine.
We have been watching this space for a number of years, and many of our large commercial clients, as well as just general consumers, have had a growing interest in being able to access care virtually. And we really just felt at this point, given that growing groundswell of interest and a number of dynamics in the market, that this was an opportune time for that. With the introduction of healthcare reform, that certainly is creating more demand for various types of basic primary care, and virtual visits are a great way to help expand that access in a simple manner that we know consumers would welcome.
Obviously, there has to be some sort of a ceiling as to the kinds of things that can be dealt with via telemedicine. Obviously life-threatening diseases and things like that would be out of play. But do you have any idea, are there any figures out there that would indicate how much of a general practitioner's typical business would come from those less serious kinds of things that could be dealt with through telemedicine?
The focus here is non-emergency type needs, what we often call acute, non-emergent, flu, cold, things like that. And, one look, and certainly, not the only look, but just one look that we had taken of, general populations in a 12-month period, for those types of services, we might expect about 4% of a population needing those types of services in a 12-month period. So it's not, obviously, a tremendous piece of all healthcare services, but it is a very important piece for people when they are looking for simple and convenient care.
What do you see are some of the advantages that not only to insurers, but to patients and doctors themselves?
There's lots of convenience, obviously, associated with this. The ability to access a medical professional, a physician, to be able to get a diagnosis or, a simple medical need, all without necessarily leaving your home or having to leave work, has time and cost savings. It also, and we hear this frequently from users, consumers find that they like the idea of not having to necessarily go into either an urgent care or certainly we hope not an emergency room for this type of care, but also being exposed to additional germs in those sorts of settings.
And the cost range is enormous, isn't it, from virtual visits to that emergency room visit? I mean, it's a tremendous difference there.
Right. And, we are looking for these visits to be in the $50 or less total cost range. And a comparative set of scope of services, for instance, in an ER, can be upwards of $650. We do think that urgent care is probably the key area where individuals might have gone if they went into a bricks and mortar location. The scope of services is fairly closely aligned with many things that can be treated in urgent care. An average cost in urgent care for these types of needs, based on our analysis, nationally runs about roughly $160. So you're looking at less than 50 compared to 160, or certainly if you're in ER, it's upwards of 650.
So if we're talking about $50, let's just say, for a virtual visit, how does that compare for an office visit and the copay that would be involved there? That would definitely be more, wouldn't it?
So first of all, yeah, what we're talking about are total costs. And so we're talking a total cost of 50 or less for a virtual visit. Comparable scope of services, total cost in a primary care setting would run about $80. And then the 160 would be urgent care, 650 ER. The copay amount, or the amount that the consumer actually pays, is then also determined by what their specific benefit, often from their employer, what those benefit parameters are. And that is what can determine if they have, for instance, a specific copay.
These days, and in this society, a litigious society, and the medical field is certainly not exempt from that. What about liability issues? What about a bad prescription that is suggested by a doctor or a bad diagnosis? How do we deal with that?
Well, so UnitedHealthcare is contracting these provider groups, just as we would contract bricks and mortar provider groups. And I'm not an attorney or an expert on malpractice, but I can tell you within just our standard provider contracts, there are certain requirements around malpractice and those sorts of things.
The other issue that occurs to me that people might have some concerns about are privacy. We're dealing with the Internet and with a lot of information floating around in cyberspace, and we all know that that isn't always secure. How can patients be assured, do you think, that their medical information is going to be safe?
Again, we contract with these national provider groups, we are holding them to the same contractual requirements around privacy, certainly HIPAA, as any bricks and mortar practice would be held to.
Just one other issue I'd raise, and that is you're dealing with all 50 states, I assume, and there are varying regulations from state to state, I'm sure. How do you deal with that, or is that something else that you'd need an attorney's perspective on?
Well, so what I can tell you is right now, through our contracted network, there are operating provider groups in 47 states and D.C. Ultimately, those operating decisions sit with the individual provider group entities, and combined, our total footprint is 47 states and D.C. There's lots happening, at the individual state level, and that can continue to be somewhat fluid.
Sure. And just one final thought here with regard to contacting your client base. Are you going to be aggressive in informing folks that this opportunity is out there or soon will be?
Yes. And so we actually have included this in UnitedHealthcare has included it in our national brand campaign. And you may have seen a Dirty Dancing commercial for UnitedHealthcare that features virtual visits. That was really our first step into this arena and just starting to build some interest. And then after we have done the national release, we are now continuing to build out multiple marketing activities that will continue to ramp, I would say, in 2015 and probably throughout 2016.
That's Karen Scott, the Senior Director of Product and Innovation with UnitedHealthcare. We're going to dance out for a short break now. We'll come back and talk with a telemedicine patient, and also Dr. Tom Hale is also with us in studio. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our discussion about telemedicine and our discussion with Dr. Tom Hale of Mercy Virtual. Doctor, we just listened to the young lady from United Healthcare. Anything catch your ear with what she had to say?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. I think Karen made some very good points that it is increased access. It is certainly more convenient, and it does keep people in their communities. And I think she addressed some of those things that are concerning, both directly and interestingly indirectly. Directly, the security about both the electronic medical record and telemedicine is a reality. And I would be disingenuous if I said that everybody's information is completely safe. There are always somebody out there that can hack into these systems, as has been shown at Anthem and at Target and other places. But we take every precaution, as does United Healthcare and the rest of the physicians, to protect it as best that we can, both technically and physically through training. The other thing that Karen did not say, and something that I think we should point out, and this is actually the responsibility of the providers, not necessarily United Healthcare. United Healthcare is filling a gap at the present time. If we don't take the responsibilities as physicians to provide that access to care, then somebody else will. And United Healthcare is beginning to provide that access, and that means that the continuity of care that a patient receives is now broken. And that relationship that they have with their caregiver is now broken, as they're receiving care from a physician who they may only see or have an experience with one time in their life.
Yeah, that was an issue that I wanted to bring up at some point, is the consistency of having that kind of dialogue with the same person over and over again. What about the cost issue? Can you tell me from the Mercy Virtual perspective, are costs going down as a result of the way you're doing it?
So a couple of things. Cost is a big impact on a number of things. Our length of stay on our ICU patients has gone down by almost 25%. Interestingly, mortality has also gone down by 30%. So both quality and length of stay, which correlates to cost, have gone down. And that's across after we have taken in all the accounts of severity of illness and made that into a normalized process.
Well, I want to hear now and want you to hear and our audience to hear from a young man who has taken advantage of telemedicine. How does it work for the patient, I guess, is a key question. We talked with Adam Craddock. He's a 34-year-old restaurateur from Osage Beach. He sought treatment through Live Health Online, and I asked him what kind of medical condition was bothering him at the time.
I had a cough, a real bad cough, for about 4 or 5 days, and, wasn't typical. I'm not a smoker. I don't get sick very often, and, decided to call my local doctor. I don't see him often, but just to see if he could squeeze me in or give me some cough suppressant, and the response was go get some Robitussin from the store, and they were pretty booked and couldn't set me up an appointment for about a week or so, and urgent care and ER, I'm kind of a frugal person, and was trying to think of any other options there were instead of sitting in a waiting room with a bunch of sick people, and so that's where I remembered speaking to a coworker about the online health visit, the online doctors.
Did you have any trepidation about going that route?
No, not at all. I'm not a computer savvy person, so I don't have a camera on my computer. So there was an app I could download for Live Health Online, and that's where it began. And from there, it was a very, very simple process.
Well, let me ask you to walk us through that process from start to finish, if you would.
Well, you download the app, and it would create an account, and the whole login process probably took 5 minutes. I think it was based on state, so you'd log in, put in your insurance carrier, what type of doctor you were looking to see, whether it was a pediatrician or just a general practitioner, and it brought up a list of doctors in the Missouri area that were live online at that time. You can select one. You could look at their credentials, where they're located, and found a guy in Overland Park, a doctor that you know, I just, one of those things, you just liked him when you saw his picture and his credentials checked out, and only had one person in front of me, so I chose him, and it was like a virtual waiting room. There was a narration, just a recorded narration to kind of describe to you how this process was going to work, and about 2 minutes later, he pops up on the screen, and I'm holding my iPad in front of me, and had all my information in front of him, what pharmacy I was going to use, and he asked me questions from there, and obviously he could tell I had a pretty bad cough right off the bat.
Was this a Skype type of setup? Could you see each other?
Oh, yes. It was. I could see his picture. He could see mine, and yeah, very similar to Skype or FaceTime.
Sure.
On, you know, for Apple, and you know, I had a tissue in my hand. I was coughing, and you know, asked me what my symptoms were, about my general health, and he was very professional. He was in a suit and tie. I have a feeling he'd be possibly at home, but he's been a doctor for 20 years, has his own practice, and he looked, it was very, very professional. I was blown away, actually, at first. You know, it's something I wasn't familiar with, and I don't Skype or FaceTime, so that kind of blew me away a little bit too, but had me, you know, asked about the, you know, my color of my, for everything from the color of my phlegm to, you know, asking me to breathe, take a couple deep breaths near the microphone. He could hear kind of the fluttering, and just due to my symptoms and what I displayed, and he saw, the entire time he's taking notes, he's typing, and he said, "Well, I'm 99% sure you've got bronchitis and acute bronchial spasms, because I was coughing like crazy." And he recommended some medications. Now, there are rules restricting, you know, the distribution of narcotics, obviously, through this, but that's not what I said, give me the strongest. I was leaving to leave the country in a week. I said, we got to knock this out. And he prescribed me some steroids and antibiotic, the strongest cough suppressant he could. Made sure I wanted it called into the Walmart, which was near my home, which I put in earlier previously on the setup page. And it took literally about a 10-minute visit, maybe 15 to 20 minutes when I started logging in till the session was over. And 30 minutes later, I get a text message on my phone from Walmart that my prescriptions were ready for pickup. And in less than an hour and 15 minutes, I had the medications I needed to start to, you know, get some relief in my hands, literally from start to finish, an hour and 15 minutes. I would have sat in the urgent care longer than that, just waiting to see a doctor. The copay was similar to a doctor's visit. I saved money there, a lot cheaper than an emergency room visit. And I was relieved and, you know, over the cold in time to make my trip.
It sounds like something you would not be reluctant to do again.
Oh, I will absolutely do it again. Instead of, you know, just if anything from, now obviously if you, you know, I fall and crack my head open, he's not going to help me with that. But yeah, just for a little cough or a cold or you know, something like that, or even folks with kids that you know, they can't get out, or older folks that are, you know, snowed in. I mean, what a great you know, it's the future. It was really amazing.
That is Adam Craddock, obviously a very satisfied consumer. And let me assure you, he is in no way associated with the company through which he received this service. But clearly, Dr. Tom Hale, this has to have a lot of appeal to a lot of people dealing with a relatively minor problem in that way.
Oh, I think so. I think Adam pointed out a couple of things that are emblematic of why we have to change as caregivers and embrace virtual. He couldn't get into his doctor, at least for a week. Well, he was quite ill at that time, and so his only alternative was a much more expensive option, which was the emergency room or urgent care, something he didn't really need. And so he was able to access a virtual visit. I think the other thing that he brings up, though, is the whole thing about that virtual care is much more than just telemedicine. It's asynchronous care. He could have had his visit as an e-visit asynchronously with his Mercy physician through his My Mercy account. Or he could have called Nurse on Call, which is available 24/7 and is beginning to evolve into Primary Care on Call. All those things need to happen, not only because consumers demand it, and in fact, in lieu of that, that it is a fix to the access problem that we have, and so people deserve it.
By asynchronous, I just want to be clear, what you mean is sending an email or a tweet or a text message of some sort explaining what the problem is and getting an answer sometime later.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a secure and very structured email that is sent to the physician, and it very much mirrors down a decision tree, very much like a live conversation. I think the other thing, too, to point out in the virtual space, which we haven't really talked yet because it's all been about face-to-face visits, but we can monitor elderly patients at home with wearable monitors, very akin to the Fitbit or the new iPhone, and we can actually tell whether they've fallen versus whether they've sat mm-hmm. down. We can tell whether they've gotten out of bed or whether they've been laying in bed for 8 hours. So we can tell their heart rate, their respiratory rate, their temperature. And the number one readmission for an elderly patient is actually infection. And we can catch their infections much earlier because of that home monitoring, which is not a televised event, but rather home monitoring that can catch that temperature changes much earlier.
We'll be talking a little bit later in the program with a gentleman who is from this area, by the way, and in New York now and is one of these providers and basically lobbies against the video visits and more for the asynchronous visits. So we'll get into that just a little bit later. Did you in your wildest dreams when you got started in medicine, however many years ago that was, think it was going to wind up going in this direction?
Absolutely not. I'm Medicare age now, and somebody asked me, has this become personal? And I said, you know, it has become personal. It's become personal because there aren't enough doctors and there isn't enough access, and my family is going to need care, and the poor and underserved need care, and this is going to be one of the ways that we can get there.
Well, you mentioned earlier in the program that not all doctors are crazy about the idea, but a growing number seems to be coming on board. Dr. Peter Lucas is a psychiatrist in Washington State and has been treating patients through the online healthcare provider HealthLink Now for a couple of years. Like family practitioners, he consults, diagnoses, and treats patients. We spoke yesterday, and I asked how long you've been doing telemedicine and what kinds of patients he sees.
Been doing telemedicine for almost 2 years, and I see a variety of patients, including adolescents, adults and geriatric patients, so quite a broad range. No younger children, though.
Do you think, in your experience, you're dealing with mental health issues, that is basically different in the way all of this works with physicians who would deal with physical ailments?
I think that telemedicine lends itself well to psychiatry because you have the face-to-face encounter with the patient, even though it's not it's not in person, but face-to-face, there's good visual contact, you can hear things well, and I find that I can connect with people quite readily. In different areas of telemedicine, like family practice or dermatology or radiology, it might be somewhat different, but I really feel like I have a good, personal relationship with the patients I see. I don't know if that answers your question.
I think so. I mean, basically, I'm just trying to establish that they're pretty much the same in terms of interaction with patients.
Yes.
What do you see as the principal advantages of this from the doctor's perspective?
From the doctor's perspective, it gives me a lot of flexibility in my schedule. I can work from my home office, and I've even been on the road on vacation or on a trip and been able to see patients. I don't have to be physically in an office, the same place every day. And so it gives me a lot of, as I say, geographic and scheduling flexibility.
Are you basically on call 24/7?
No. Our company works, if the patients have an issue, during the daytime, the regular weekday hours, they can call our office and my office can get a hold of me. A few of my patients have a way to reach me directly on my cell phone. Otherwise, the patients are instructed, if it's a weeknight or a weekend, to call their family practice doctor, because all of our patients have designated primary care doctors, or I've also told that if it's an emergency, they should go to the emergency room or call the crisis line.
It would seem to me that one of the key issues for physicians would be the question of liability, of a bad diagnosis, a bad prescription. I mean, these kinds of things can happen. What are your thoughts on that with regard to telemedicine and dealing with these issues?
You know, I think that there's no special liability or risk associated with telemedicine. I have as much information about my patient as I would about a patient I would see in person. I have access to a medical record, chart notes, pharmacy records, and the patients know that there's always somebody they can contact. And I haven't seen all the research, but I think the research shows that the telemedicine is no less safe than in-person medicine, as long as you stick to sort of certain parameters. But in psychiatry, I find that it's really almost the same thing as seeing a person in the flesh.
What is the average time of a consult between you and a patient, would you say?
Initial consults are about an hour, and follow-up consults, what are called, check-back appointments or follow-up appointments, are half an hour.
There are some who think that video isn't really necessary in telemedicine, that audio is sufficient. Is that something that you would subscribe to?
I really appreciate having the video connection because I can just get a better – I just feel like I have a better emotional connection with the patient. If they can see me and I can see them, I can pick up on facial expressions, body posture, sort of nonverbal cues. And there's a fair amount of information that one gets from those types of interactions that you wouldn't necessarily get from a telephone interview.
You've been doing this for a couple of years now. Do you have any concerns, or have patients expressed concerns about privacy issues? The Internet is secure most of the time, but not all of the time and not everywhere.
Well, we use what's called HIPAA-compliant software, meaning that there are security safeguards built in. I'm not an expert in those. I've never had a patient say to me, I'm afraid someone's going to hack into our session. It's just never come up, and I've never been concerned about it. And to my knowledge, it's not a big issue.
I don't want to appear crass about this, but what about the compensation for doctors who are on the other end of a telemedicine conversation? Are they going to be able to do as well financially, do you think, as those who are just taking office visits?
I think potentially, I think that I get paid adequately, and I probably make as much as I could be making in face-to-face encounters. I don't know. I'm not an expert in other areas of telemedicine, like intensive care telemedicine or dermatology telemedicine. The payers, like Medicaid, Medicare, and private insurance companies, are not necessarily totally up to date on telemedicine. So once we get, once they come on board with compensation systems and recognizing what's called parity, that is, they reimburse at the same rate they would do a face-to-face encounter, that I think physicians can certainly make, a good living.
Do you think that telemedicine is going to play a big role in the future of the medical world?
Yes. I just attended a conference in Los Angeles last week, the American Telemedicine Association, and it is growing. It's very clear that telemedicine, not just telepsychiatry, but all forms of telemedicine, is a rapidly expanding industry with many applications and many advantages over traditional face-to-face encounters in many settings. I think it's just going to grow by leaps and bounds.
That's Dr. Peter Lucas, a psychiatrist, talking to us from Washington State. Dr. Tom Hale, you were making copious notes there as he was speaking. What struck you about his conversation?
Well, yeah, and unfortunately, I'm a visual learner, so I always have to make notes or I never remember anything. But I think his stressing that you do form a relationship over that video visit, and I think the visual is important. in that regards. It was a surprise to me because I'm not of that generation. But we live in a culture now where that visual visit or that visual image on the screen now becomes a relationship, a Twitter relationship, a Facebook relationship. All things, like I said, are foreign to my history, but I am beginning to understand the power that it actually can bring.
We'll be talking in a moment with a doctor from New York who is a St. Louis native, by the way, who doesn't think that the video component is really that necessary. We'll do that in just a moment. Let's take that break. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. We're being joined now by Dr. Jay Parkinson, co-founder and chief medical officer for Sherpa, a New York City healthcare service that has a somewhat different business model. He joins us by phone. And Dr. Parkinson, it's kind of a welcome home for you. I understand you're a local man and a graduate of Washington University.
Well, I sure am. Absolutely. I moved to out of the state when I was 22 years old. So first 22 years of my life were wonderful.
Well, it's good to have you back, if only via the telephone. Explain that business plan of yours to me, if you will. We've talked about asynchronous contact. You're not a fan of the video component, are you?
No, I'm not, actually. You know, I think that, you know, about 98% of the communication that happens between our doctors and patients happens via asynchronous email-like messaging within our secure application. Only about 2% of the time do we jump on the phone, but about a quarter of the time people attach photos. So we think that's much better than video visits.
I'm really quite surprised by that figure you've just given me here. It seems to me that most of the contact I would be familiar with would be sitting in an office and chatting with a doctor.
That's true, but, you know, that's been going on for thousands of years. And now that we have, you know, email. It's just, it's a whole revolution in how humans communicate.
Well, certainly understand that, and we have been talking about that through the entire portion of this program. But there seems to be a lot of folks who are in favor of that video contact. They can see each other and perhaps accomplish more. A dermatologist, for instance, could see a rash or something of that nature.
Yeah, you know, that's true. But actually, whenever a high-quality photograph is taken, it's much better because it allows you to, you know, compare pictures in the past with the ones that you see today or in the future. So, you know, it's just the issue is, you know, email allows you to free up time slots. You don't really have to focus on communicating in 15-minute time slots. You can communicate whenever you want. So, you know, that's actually what we found a better means of communication than video visits or, you know, sometimes even in-person visits.
Let me just get the take of Dr. Tom Hale, who is with me here in studio. He's with Mercy Virtual. Dr. Hale, what are your thoughts about that?
It was interesting. One of our services that we do in Mercy Virtual is the intensive care monitoring. And we first did one-way video and nothing but audio in the ICU. We switched to two-way video so that our ICU physician could be seen. And the interesting thing was that it was a significant impact on the relationship between the caregivers, both at the EICU and in compliance with the recommendations of the ICU physician, went up 40% just by changing to a video visit. So whereas I think you can learn a lot through audio, I think video certainly does enhance, as does monitoring data, as does EHR data, as does pictures. Store and forward. Any data that we can gather will enhance the visit.
Dr. Parkinson?
Yeah, you know, I agree in very certain situations. So absolutely in the exact situation that we're talking about now, video, you know, seems like a wonderful solution. It's just, you know, it's not appropriate or not actually chosen by patients as their preferred means of communication. We've been around for about 3 years now, and we've actually never had one request from a patient asking for a video visit.
Tell us something about Sherpa and how it's structured and how you're working with the organizations that you work with, the companies you work with.
Yeah, sure. So Sherpa is an employer solution that connects employees directly with our Sherpa doctors. And basically, we diagnose, treat, and resolve healthcare issues. It's almost all email-like secure messaging within our web app and iPhone app. And we don't bill insurance or the employee for these kind of interactions. So that reduces medical claims and overall costs for both employers and employees. And, you know, it's just, I think, pretty much mimics how people communicate nowadays.
Well, how are transactions handled? Obviously, everybody's in this to make a buck. How do you charge?
Well, we charge the employer about $30 a month per employee, and that's it. It's free for the employees to use, and they can use it as much as they want.
You know, it's been my observation, and others too, I'm sure, that the older generation, if you will, is really not so savvy and not really into texting or even emailing, if you will, not to mention the video component. Is that a problem for you, the older folks not using that technology?
Well, not really, because, you know, our main focus is on the younger generations, those companies that have a younger subset of employees. Because, you know, every great sort of technology starts with the people that get it immediately. I mean, if the iPhone launched with my parents' generation, it never would have taken off. So we're really targeting those people that really get it. And I believe in trickle-down technology. I mean, a classic example is my parents are now on Facebook. It took them a couple of years, but they're doing it, and that's how we communicate nowadays.
So you're not turning your back on the older folks. You're just waiting for them to kind of catch up with the kids, huh?
That's exactly right. And about 15, you know, healthcare is about 15 years behind the times. That's a pretty generous assumption. And, you know, we're basically just mimicking how people communicate nowadays and, you know, bringing it to healthcare.
How do you think you're doing in terms of competing with the other healthcare organizations, that online healthcare organizations that do depend so heavily on video?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There are about 100 billion emails and about 40 billion iMessages sent per day, but only about 15 million and 3 million Skype video chats per day. It's about 0.01% of all online communications happen via video. So, you know, in a sense, they get about 2% usage, supposedly, whenever they're offered to employees. Our usage is about 70%. So it's a fundamentally different ballgame.
How about, how are you growing? Are you growing at a pretty significant and steady rate?
Yeah, we're in about 13 states now. We started in New York City about 3.5 years ago. We're in about 13 states, and every day we are adding employers. We're focused on the 100 to 1,000 employee-sized companies. So, you know, we have a strong sales team, and we're growing significantly.
What about the issue of dealing with varying regulations or various regulations in numerous states? Is that an issue?
It is an issue. You know, it's something that I think our culture will figure out eventually. But, you know, right now we just license our doctors in the states in which we practice. Now, keep in mind, one of the big differentiators between us and most everyone else is that we hire our doctors, and they work full-time for us, which maintains continuity and also just enables us to not have to charge for, you know, 15-minute time slots. Our doctors communicate, you know, over time. We really own the issue from the beginning to the end and follow up. And we can do that because our doctors get paid for communication, not by time slots.
Are Missouri and Illinois among those states that in which you're operating?
Illinois is. Missouri is on the docket for the end, before 2015 ends.
All righty. Well, let us know when that happens. We'd very much like to keep abreast with what you're doing. And Dr. Jay Parkinson, thank you so much for being with us. It's a very interesting concept that you have, and good luck with it.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Jay Parkinson joining us from New York City. Dr. Jay Parkinson. Dr. Tom Hale, what do you think?
Well, I think Dr. Parkinson makes some very good points, and I think the service that he's providing is part of that spectrum of virtual care that will be out there for people to access. He's improved access to care. What he didn't say, and I'm sorry he didn't, and I'm sure he's very proud of it, the reason he's successful in selling to businesses, because businesses know that if patients have access to care, they don't go to the emergency room, they stay at work, they're more productive, it all works out much better. Although we started as a telemedicine program, I think that we have to evolve into a virtual care program because it has all sorts of avenues and aspects and modalities.
Is it too early to say that this is going to be dramatic in bringing down costs in healthcare? I mean, everybody's talking about it, obviously, and has been for a while.
I do think it is too early to say. I am convinced that it will. The early people who are entering this market outside the healthcare providers, the private companies, the insurance companies, are thinking of it more as a revenue business model rather than a decreased cost. I think as the healthcare providers like Mercy, like SSM, like Barnes get more and more into virtual, their interest will be increased quality, better access, and decreased cost. But I think we've shown in the EICU model, by decreasing length of stay, by decreasing mortality and morbidity, that we can definitely, by that fact alone, will lower costs.
Do you think the regulators are going to have to get into this in the not-too-distant future and make their presence felt?
So we live using our children's technology under our parents' regulations. I actually have an entire department that all they do is license and credential our physicians so that we can work in other states. Yes, definitely. That will have to come to fore, but it will not necessarily be a barrier. It will just be something that will be a little drag to its progress.
But the regulators are really going to have to be conversant with the medical world, are they not? I mean, this can't be done simply by politicians.
Absolutely, and that's why I'm here today, and why I was talking in Los Angeles, where the other gentleman was. Any opportunity we have to help people understand the power that this brings as an augmentation to their caregivers' delivery and their relationship with their physician, we want to make it known.
What's the most important thing do you think the consumer has to know at this point?
I think I think the consumer already recognizes that it gives you a doctor by the bedside. It allows the physician to be with you in your community. It brings the care from the best universities to all communities and to homes. I think the consumers recognize that. I think the caregivers and providers now need to begin to understand that it's not a replacement of doctors, it's an augmentation.
What do you want the consumer to know about Mercy Virtual? We'll give you some time here to do your commercial, but there's so much going on out there. In a minute or so, what can you tell us?
So no commercial about Mercy other than the fact that we're very proud of Mercy Virtual, and it will, well, we'll occupy it in July. It will open for people to take tours in September and October. But I think the community should be proud of what Mercy has done in St. Louis, and for the St. Louis community, I say our other healthcare providers, SSM and Barnes and St. Anthony's and others. This is a very proud and good medical community.
Are they the others that you've just named? Are they moving in this direction too? I'm not really conversant with what they're up to.
They are moving in that direction. They're moving more slowly, and as we have 9 to 10 years under our belt. They probably have 1 to 2, but they are headed in that direction. They're good physicians. They're good leaders. It's just all part of the change process.
Well, the St. Louis medical community has always been right near the top of the list when it comes to medical care here, and I guess this is going to just keep moving us forward in that regard.
And why St. Louis to be the first virtual care center where people from all over the world come and visit? It's to your point. It's a great community from a medical standpoint, to medical schools, but also with the universities, they're here as well.
Yeah. Well, we're all very familiar with that part of it. And Dr. Tom Hale from Mercy Virtual, thank you so much for being with us and helping us out during the course of this program. Most informative indeed. Appreciate your time.
No, I appreciate being here, and thanks for the opportunity.
That's it for us. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with Alvin Parks about his 2 terms as mayor of East St. Louis and what's next as he has left office. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.